You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Folks, we've got another red-hot radio program for you this cold January evening. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. I'm your host, James Edwards, this Saturday, January 13th. I am very excited to be welcoming back to the show an old friend of mine, Nick Griffin. And since he's going to be on with us for the full hour, he's burning the midnight oil over there in the United Kingdom. I'm going to give you a more detailed introduction than I would for most guests. Nick Griffin, of course, graduated from Cambridge University with an honors degree in law. As the former chairman of the British National Party, the BNP became the most successful far-right party in British history, winning seats at every level of local and regional government in British politics. In 2009, as you'll famously remember, Nick Griffin was elected as a member of the European Parliament for the Northwest of England, serving as an MEP for 5 years. Since leaving the BNP in 2014, he's been involved in political work at a pan-European level as vice president of the Alliance for Peace and Freedom. He's also a key figure in efforts to organize traditionalists around a muscular Christianity. He warns that Western civilization faces an existential crisis, not only because of immigration and Islamization, but due to social collapse caused by extreme liberalism and a drastic slump in the indigenous birthrate of European peoples. Nick Griffin is married with 4 grown-up Welsh-speaking children and 6 grandchildren. Nick, so happy to have you back with us. Thanks for staying up late.
Thank you, James. It's good to be back.
Well, we've got a lot to talk with you about and an hour to get it all in. So first of all, let's just start with what's going on in Europe. We read some things that seemingly are very bad, some things that we can invest a little bit of hope in, but nobody better to tell us what's exactly going on in Europe than someone who actually lives there. So let's start in your neck of the woods. Would you still consider London to be British-occupied territory?
Still British territory geographically, but it isn't British. I was born in London and spent the first part of my life there, and I hate to go back now because I'm a foreigner in my own capital city.
And so I take it that you're not currently living there in London?
No, not likely. There's no place for human beings to live and rear children and grandchildren. No, I live in the mountains of Wales, about 300 miles away from London, which by British geographical standards is a long way. And I'm very pleased about that.
I understand. Well, of course, you look back on the glorious history of the British Empire. Of course, the old saying once was told that the sun never set on it. Now, of course, they don't control the streets of their own capital city. You, of course, have made your claim to fame in politics in that particular region of the world. What do you think the prospects are for London and the UK going forward?
Well, James, in 1995, I hadn't long been involved in the BNP. I was involved in the National Front before that. But I got heavily involved in the BNP about 1995, and I did a speaking tour. And I spoke at party branches up and down the country, dozens of them. And I said to people, look, for demographic reasons, not just their birth rate and immigration, but also our birth rate or the collapse in it, for demographic years, we've got 20 to 25 years to turn this around. And if we don't do it in that time, then the political road shuts. So we need to clean up our act to make ourselves electable, which to a degree we did. But quite simply now, we didn't make the break in the end with enormous pressure and lawfare, legal warfare against us, far left violence, the safety valve party, UKIP, being promoted to steal our thunder, and they managed to block us, with the result that the 20 to 25 years are up, time's up, and there is no political road which can save not just Britain, but the whole of Western Europe. And anyone who tells people otherwise is either a fool or a crook just trying to get their money.
That could certainly be considered to be a black pill, to use the parlance of our times. So if that's the case, certainly you don't find yourself content to exit the stage of history. quietly what would be a solution for the people of British descent
to
reclaim their homeland.
We'll have to take to the gun because that's also a closed road for many reasons. It might have been possible 100 years ago, probably immoral, but possible. But in a surveillance state, it's not. So quite simply, we have to look further back in history to see what happens next. Because, you see, we've been here before. It's not just Britain, it's Europe as a whole. But we've been here before in Spain when the Muslim Moors took over. And then, owing to civilizational incompetence, the population collapsed. And the Reconquista, which took 800 years, wasn't just about beating the Moors on the battlefield, which the Christian armies generally did. It was also about the time it took to breed enough surplus children to go and take back the lost lands. And that is what we're going to be looking at in the whole of Western Europe. So the question is, where does our people, our culture, our faith, where can they survive? And the answer, realistically, is not in an organized sense anyway, in a Western Europe where the liberal elites will, as things get worse and the more the problems with the extremist Muslims develop, the people that they will set out to punish and suppress will be members of the indigenous community and especially Christians who object and try and do something about it. So the only place way that there's a way forward is if very significant numbers of our people move with their children and grandchildren to places where we can maintain our culture, maintain our faith, really bluntly, breed enough children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to take the lost lands back. And the good news is that if it went, say, 20 years ago, there was apparently nowhere, and now there's the whole of Central and Eastern Europe, but effectively now is clearly governed by people speaking on behalf of their nation as a whole, who have turned their back on the Western liberal suicide mode of doing politics. They want to survive, and they will. And that's the place where I believe the torch of European civilization will be kept alive until our people in the future go back to our homelands.
I couldn't have asked you to answer that question any more appropriately when you consider that it was a foreshadowing of things to come in the second half of this interview. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, we have Nick Griffin for the full hour, our first hour tonight. And later on in this hour, we're going to talk to him about what's going on in Central and Eastern Europe. Is it the real deal? Is it fool's gold? We'll hear Nick's answer on that. Also, the role of Christianity in nationalist movements going forward in the current year and beyond. So all of that's coming, and he just touched on both of those topics there in his last answer. And I think he's quite right, by the way. But I would ask you this very quickly before we come up on our first commercial break, and it's just seconds away. Where would you compare where America is today versus that where the UK is currently?
I suspect that you're about 25 years, you've got about 25 years on us in terms of it's not as bad as we are. But it's heading in that direction, with the immigration problem, with your own native demographic problem, and especially despite Trump being in power at present. If you look at what, not just the deep state, but the people who make the place tick in terms of the mass media, the people designing the curriculum in your public school, basically the far left, the 1968 generation, and the...
Nick, hold on right there, my friend. Hate to interrupt you, but we got to take our first break of the hour. We'll be back
okay,
with more of Nick Griffin right after this. Yes, thank you.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you noticed a couple of pauses from me in between Nick's responses in the first segment, it was because I didn't have my headset audio completely configured correctly, and we got that worked out during the break, so we're at full strength again. Back with us, the one and only Nick Griffin, former chairman of the British National Party, former member of European Parliament. We're going to learn later this hour also what Nick's doing currently, what he's up to these days. But first, back to the question we had before the break. I was asking Nick to compare and contrast America's current state with that of his homeland, and you were saying we're about 25 years behind, and it seems a pity.
I think that's the case, which means there is still time to turn it around, but again, for demographic reasons, it's very unlikely. Basically, by the time of the next generation, by the next election, probably you find that enough good old Americans have died, and enough of the new Americans, the cuckoos in the nest in many cases, have come on to voting age, and things get harder and harder for the Republicans to win. And, of course, in any case, the Republican establishment is fundamentally against traditional America in any case. So it looks very difficult. The one big difference, I think, is that whereas to look for a future for our children and grandchildren in Western Europe, we have to look to Eastern Europe, whereas in the United States, it's so big. That I think in due case, when the crisis arises that breaks it up, you'll still end up with the largest indigenous European nation in the entire world outside of Russia. So
yeah,
it'll be okay.
It's actually amazing. I was just having some fun a few weeks back and doing a Google map search, how long it takes to drive from one city to another in Europe, and you can literally drive across the entire length and width of Europe in about the same amount of time as it takes to drive from Memphis to Florida. It's
yes,
amazing,
indeed.
And that's nothing compared to, you know, coast to coast. But and if there are some differences, of course. Our immigrants are typically Mexicans who come in to leech off of our system, whereas your immigrants are much more violent in nature and much more odious in terms of the Muslim. I mean, you have flat out literal terrorists coming in by the boatloads. And so there are some differences, but obviously there's so much overlap. There's still the overlap of being demographically displaced, the overlap of the media being 100% against the founding stock, every degeneracy imaginable, from homosexual marriage to every perversion you could mention tonight, is being pushed, while traditionalism, and in fact white genocide, is really what's going on here. But let's talk about Eastern Europe. Do you think that we see these headlines of what's going on in Poland, for instance, in Hungary, and of course, Russia? I believe we covered a segment not long ago where the president of Poland declared Jesus Christ's kingship over the country. I mean, this is amazing for a Christian in America to read that. That would never happen here. Our own churches here wouldn't do that. Is what's going on in Eastern Europe, is that the real deal, or is that not as good as it seems, or is it better than it seems?
It's a hard question. The case that you just mentioned there, it wasn't just the president of Poland declared Jesus Christ was the king of Poland. It was the entire Polish political, correct, religious elite, and it was a very, very solemn service. Something really quite astounding. Basically, there's a revival of a real European Christianity going on. It started really in Russia, and it's spread now. So indirectly, it's spread to Poland. It's developing in Hungary as well. And I think the more these countries look at forget the immigration issue, look at just the moral, social chaos that is now Western Europe, the sheer insanity of it, and the more people in the East look at it, the more they react against it. Another very important factor is that so many young Poles, especially, but Hungarians, Czechs, and so on, have come to Britain over the last 10 years. They've worked here and so on. And so they've seen up close and personal what a mass immigration from the Third World, and especially from Islamized failed states, really means. So they've all got relatives back home. They all speak to them. Quite a lot of them have gone home. And over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, that personal experience has bypassed anything the media may or may not say about it, to convince the peoples of Eastern Europe that they don't want their countries to go the same way as the West. So to an extent, some of their political elite, they're still essentially their politicians. They'll do whatever they need to do to get votes and to get money, I'm afraid. But because the grassroots pressure is saying, we don't want mass immigration, we don't want these terrorists being allowed to come and live here, we want to retain a Christian society, the politicians are responding to that, and it's making those countries the future bastion of the free Europe.
So you're saying, in essence, what I've long believed, but not being a person who has been born in Europe and raised in Europe and fought in Europe as you have, I can only take it from secondhand accountings, but you're saying the future of the West may indeed be in the East. And we're going to talk in the next segment about the role of Christianity, the role that Christianity can play, rather, in nationalism and in nationalist movements. But is the nationalism going on in Poland and in Hungary with Viktor Orban, is it more of a regional nationalism where they're proud to be Poles, or do they understand that the racial dynamic is something that's also a very significant part in that?
It's a combination, I would say. They probably wouldn't say, most of them wouldn't say racial, they'd say cultural and Christianity. But equally, they mean both at a conscious and a subconscious level. If they were pushed to it, they'd say white, but it's very politically incorrect to say that. So it's a work in progress. This, as I say, the more they see the West going down the tubes, the healthier they become. Well, it's partly by ideological decision, and it's partly just by pressure from the public opinion below. But it's going in the right direction.
Well, what do you think, Nick, and this is an important question, how did the East get it right when the West got it so wrong? The East suffered so much under communism. Is it because of that suffering that they came out stronger?
To an extent, it is economic, and it's precisely because they had communism. See, if it hadn't been for the economic disaster that communism was, countries such as Czechoslovakia, now the Czech Republic and Slovakia, and Hungary, would have been streets ahead of large parts of Western Europe in economic terms, because before the First World War, they were heading in that direction, and between the wars, they were definitely going there fast. And they were, in an incredible way, very lucky to have this communist fantasy put on them, which ruined their economies, which made those countries so poor that they weren't attractive for essentially a parasite mentality to go there. Also, they had still a higher birth rate longer than us, so they didn't get, although it's now pretty catastrophic in many of those countries, at least they're trying to do something about it, but they didn't have the demographic gap building up as early as we had in the West. You know, there is a genuine pressure to bring people into this, into Britain, for instance, young people, because there aren't enough young people now to do the jobs. And more important than that, now that robots can do the jobs, there aren't enough people to consume the things that the robots can make. So capitalism now will want immigrants from somewhere or another. The sensible thing to do would be to look at, if you had to do it, would be, of course, the real thing to do is to pay your own people to have children, large numbers of children. But if you can't or won't do that, the next thing would be to look around the world for countries with Christian immigrants and try and take them. But because there's a big section of our liberal elite which is fundamentally wanting, as you said, to get rid of white people, they won't take, say, Christians from Lebanon or Syria. All they want is Muslims and Africans, because they're the ones who'll do the job to destroy the genotype of the white people of Western Europe.
Great answer. Once again, I find myself in agreement. And I would ask you one more thing on the situation in Eastern Europe. When we come back, we're going to focus exclusively on Christianity. But what would you say is the strongest? What would you say is the light that is shining brightest in Eastern Europe? What is the beacon above all of the others? And you can just do it in one word. What's the one country that's showing us the way more than the others?
Hungary.
Hungary. All right. Well, there you have it, folks. If you've ever seen Viktor Orban's wall, hey, that would give Donald Trump, we're a year into the Trump administration. Viktor Orban can show you how it's done. He's done it, and it's worked. And it will work here if you have the will to make it happen, Mr. President. We'll be back with Nick Griffin right after this. Stay tuned.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
We fought. We learned. We struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
When a beer commercial, everyone's happy and they're jumping around in there or whatever.
The thing is they not only have appealing activities, they have appealing people out there too. You know, you see beer commercials and it's done with natural water and it's cold brewed or heat pasteurized and all that kind of stuff. They make it sound more like a health food almost, but they never show the hangovers or alcoholism or anything like that.
And then in reality, you're happy and then you're vomiting in the bathroom and then you're waking up sick the next morning with a really bad headache.
Any person that says that beer is merely for recreational use is stupid, because it's a form of alcohol.
They just want your money. It's the people that sell the product that are getting the most out of it, not the people that use it.
That's exactly what they're doing. They're all sell our beer and it doesn't matter what it takes, just sell it.
No, they're not honest messages. They don't show the flip side of it, the results of alcohol.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Nick Griffin is our guest for the full hour tonight. Very honored to have him back with us. It's been a while. It's been too long, in fact. And he's staying up well past midnight now in the UK to...
It is indeed. Half past 12, yeah.
Burning the midnight oil quite literally here for you, ladies and gentlemen. And one of the things I was most excited tonight to talk to Nick about was the role of Christianity in nationalist movements. I'm a Christian. Nick's a Christian. This is a Christian show. It is also very much a pro-white show. And, of course, Nick's work in politics has championed our people as well. And there is nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong in putting your family first. In fact, I think that is far from... being at odds with our faith, it in fact puts us in congruence with our faith. But so I'm going to approach this, Nick, if you can bear with me here. Obviously, from a pro-Christian perspective, though I am highly critical of the politically correct and anti-white church leadership here in the West and certainly here in America, I would say ultimately that any movement without Christ at its center is ultimately doomed to fail. Now, I have a lot of friends who I work with on these issues who do not share our faith. I would go to war with them. I don't mind being in a foxhole with them. I think sometimes their antagonism or indifference towards Christianity can be perhaps short-sighted. On the other hand, as I wrote to you earlier this week, the leaders of the Protestant denominations here in America basically said, literally said, that white racial consciousness and only white racial consciousness will lead you to hell. They say it's a sin to recognize your racial heritage. I was raised in a Southern Baptist church. I still take my family to church every week. Most of the people in the pews don't go along with this head table, but as Professor Andrew Fraser said on this program a few months ago, a lot of churches now are beginning to look like the Communist Party at prayer. Now, this particular show, and I know your work as well, caters to an audience, to constituents that reconcile matters of faith and heritage, which is sometimes a rarity in this movement. But what would you say? That being said, that's my position restated for the audience. But for you, Nick, the role of Christianity in national movements, where is it? What can it be? What should it be?
Well, I agree with you entirely, James, especially thinking in terms of Western Europe, where we face the Islamist problem. Islamism is obviously based on a religion, and to try to oppose religious fanatics with politics is essentially the old mistake of taking a knife to a gunfight. When you're up against a religion which has people who are wanting to die for it, you have to fight that with people who in the end are willing to die for their faith. And that only really comes from Christianity. So apart from the moral and the spiritual reasons, there's also a purely practical reason. If you want to fight a fanatic religion, you can only do so with people who are also religious fanatics. So there's that. Then when people say we've got to unite, what can you unite the peoples of Europe around? You know, the tradition of the French hate the English hate the French, the Germans and the Poles hate each other, the Russians and the Poles hate each other, but everyone hates each other. How can you unite them around anything? Just look for the common denominator. There's only one. The Christianity. If you go to any little village anywhere in the whole of Europe or a country settled by Europeans, what's the one building that's in every single village, the largest building in every single village? It's church. If you look at all our literature, Shakespeare or whatever, how could you understand Shakespeare without understanding Christianity? So it's the very core of our identity. So when we're in a war for our identity, to turn your back on that in pursuit, perhaps, of saying, oh, we'll have some new thing or past and long-dead political ideology, it's simply suicidal tactically, let alone the moral reason for the only thing to do is to stick with Christianity. The fact that the Christian church leadership are completely rotten, so what has happened in the past? Have a reformation. If you can't have a Reformation, then look for a church which isn't rotten. And personally, I believe that's the Russian Orthodox Church, which has come back from being basically exterminated under communism. So it understands martyrdom. It's really suffered martyrdom. It's a proper Christian religion. And if the Christianity of Western Europe won't save us, then the Christianity of the East must have its chance.
Nick, I hope you don't think that I'm being sensationalist here, and I am completely honest and raw and open with my audience, and I want to say to you and to them that I actually felt something during your answer there that inspired me inside. Of course, everything we had talked about earlier I agreed with, but there was something in hearing your answer and in hearing that your response that really just made the hair on my arm stand. And I think that is something that just can't be felt by people who do not share our faith. Now, I know that people would say, well, yes, you had the Battle of Tours, you had the Battle of Vienna, Charles Martel and John Sobieski, and Christianity united the tribes of Europe back then. But that was a long time ago. God died since then and all of this. Or they would say, what you just mentioned, that the church is now, look what we've got here. You've got all of these people. Look at how anti-white the church is. And I would say, well, yes, the long march through the institutions, as my co-host Keith Alexander so often mentions, they didn't forget to go through the seminaries as they were taking the universities and the media and all of these other and the White House and the Congress and Parliament and all of that. They didn't forget the churches when they were capturing these other institutions, but you wouldn't give up on these other institutions. You wouldn't give up on recapturing media or government or et cetera. So I think that should be remembered as well. And I would just like to ask you to expound upon a little bit more those who would look at Christianity, establishment Christianity of the last 20 to 30 years and say that and that alone is the reason we should move on and move away from that. You would say, well, I guess what you just said, but I'd like to get you to elaborate a little
bit more. I would say no, because when the Comintern, after the failure of the communist revolutions of the early 1920s, when they set about analyzing Western European society to find out why they hadn't won, they decided that when Marx had predicted they would there first, they decided the core of the problem was Western man's addiction to Christianity and to tradition. So they decided to smash tradition, and one of the ways they did it was they consciously decided to infiltrate the seminaries and to take the church over from within and thereby destroy it, which in due course, of course, is exactly what they've done. So when you consider that the communists, these brilliant evil revolutionaries, saw the absolute pinnacle of Western civilization that had to be destroyed as Christianity, and they set about destroying it through infiltration, then you have to counter that to say that that's Christianity is the important thing. So the fact that the leaders are some of the lowest of the low in terms of liberal vermin on the planet now, that shouldn't put you off the thing, because they were put there deliberately in order to destroy it. So move past the rotten leaders and do it yourself, or turn to a church which still has proper traditional Christian values.
Our race alone will not save us. And I don't mean in a spiritual and a salvational sense. It will not save us on this earthly plane either. You need something more. You need something deeper.
Yep.
And you
do indeed. Can I add an extra? There's an extra dimension to this as well, if we've got a couple of minutes for possibly a little bit of a tangent. But,
well, I'll tell you what, whatever we don't get into before the music starts, we'll carry over to the next break, okay. But go ahead and begin. Please do.
Yep. So even if you didn't have the immigration problem, the demographic decline of Western Europe in particular is such, in America as well, white America, you're looking at a 70-80% collapse in population over the next 100 years. That's two black deaths, the equivalent of two black deaths. It's a catastrophe that no civilization can possibly survive. How can you face it, deal with it, by having large families? Now, you look at the Wahhabi Muslims, the Orthodox Jews, the Amish, Russian Orthodox priests. They're the only peoples in our world having lots of children. What's the common denominator between all those people? Religion. So if you want large families, you have to have religion. It's just the way it is. So if we've got to have a religion to have the large families we need to rebuild our society, which religion are we going to choose? I don't want Wahhabi Islam. I don't want Orthodox Judaism, at least for us, Christianity. It's the way to have enough kids to repopulate what's going to be a shattered world.
Are you hearing this, ladies and gentlemen? He is 100% right. I don't say that because he's my guest. I would be more than happy to disagree with any guest, including Nick Griffin. If I found him to be wrong, I would do it politely. He is correct. There is a huge difference between what you see coming out of the churches today and the Christian faith as it has been traditionally practiced by Europeans for the last 2,000 plus years. Believe it, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't believe it, you can learn more. And I'm sure either of us could help you could help you in that. When we come back from the break, we're going to learn more about what Nick Griffin is doing currently. But it is hard to depart from this particular topic because it is one that I am so very passionate about. And it's one that I think doesn't get its just due our greater cause. But we've got to take a break. You hear the music, so we'll be back. One final segment tonight with Nick Griffin. This is one of those hours that I wish could extend for many, many more. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I mean it very much, ladies and gentlemen. I enjoy every segment I've ever done on this show now, and it's 14th year. Can you believe we've been on the air for 14 years? And I enjoy every guest. I enjoy every hour. This guest, this hour, I have particularly enjoyed, not just because of who he is, but also because of what we're talking about. It's Well, the stars are in alignment right now, I guess you could say. And I don't know how many of you actually know this, ladies and gentlemen. You know that 2004 was a very big year for me. It was the year, in fact, of course, that I founded this radio program. But it was also the year that I met a lot of people who have had an impact on this show, one of which being Nick Griffin. Nick Griffin and I were both speaking at an event in 2004, and he was Nick Griffin then. I wasn't quite James Edwards yet. I was just a guy who had run for office and had been defeated. I don't know if you'll remember this, Nick. I think we were in the hall and we were passing each other, and you had come up to me and said some very kind words, and I'd never forgotten that. And of course, a little did I know that I'd go into radio later that year, and 14 years later, we'd still be talking. But
very good.
It's funny how life works out.
Very pleased to be there. Yeah.
Well, let's very quickly before we move on. I want to talk about your current activities, your current efforts. Obviously, you're still fighting. You will fight until God Himself calls you home, as will I, as will so many in our audience. I want to talk about your current activities, what you're working on right now. But is there anything before we move on from the topic of our faith and the faith of our fathers? Is there anything more on that you'd like to add before we talk about what Nick Griffin's
just
doing today?
As briefly as I can, a bit more about the importance of Christianity and the struggle, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners sort of on the slightly harder edge of your spectrum, you know, will be far-righters, people who either themselves or they certainly know people, friends and so on, who basically say that the white race is the pinnacle of everything. They effectively worship it. And I understand why. You know, I've been there. Yes, the preservation of our race is immensely important to me. But people who put the race at the very pinnacle, there's a tremendous danger that they're facing there. And I'm seeing it beginning to come through now in some of the harder elements of the far right. It's very, very dangerous, where people say the race is all that matters. So really, in the end, if we had to convert to Islam to survive, we're so much cleverer than them, we'd soon take it all over, and we'd still have our race to what, because religion doesn't matter. I think that's catastrophically wrong. It's a tactical disaster. It's a moral abomination. And worst of all, because these people saying this, they're never going to be anything more than gadflies. They're never going to have power. The only people who will have the power to change present liberalism might be the Islamists. So this, therefore, is a gateway drug for especially alienated young white men to end up becoming, if they start thinking about white Sharia is some kind of good idea, it's one step away then from converting to Islam. And the reality is that the wonders of European civilization in the old land and in the new world as well are partly the creation of the innate genius of our people, but also they spent 40 without it really clicking. It's only when you got Christianity as well, based on individual responsibility, the idea of, you know, judgment, something more important than individuals. So much comes from that in terms of a civilized society, science, and so on. So much comes from it that if you take the Christian religion out of it, then effectively even we go back to the Stone Age. Very dangerous that people are on that road.
I have to agree, of course. The white race existed, white people existed long before, I guess you could say, we embraced Christianity. But it was, and people would say, well, causation, correlation and causation are not necessarily the same. Well, of course, unless they are. And I think the greatest achievements that that our race, our people, whether they be Western Europeans, Northern Europeans, Italians, Americans, whatever, the greatest advancements and achievements we ever made came as a result of our Christianity. I believe that. You don't have to believe that, but that is something that I believe. And now, as we have entered into a post-Christian America and a post-Christian Western Europe, I think the decline is predictable.
Yeah, absolutely so. Yeah, we're on the same page precisely.
And we talked earlier with regards to Eastern Europe. What is prompting so much encouraging activity over there? Is it their civic nationalism? Is it their regional nationalism? Is it their racial nationalism? And of course, all of those can be overlapping. They're not mutually exclusive. You can have all of that, and all of that is important. But here, of course, we reconcile our cultural heritage and our spiritual heritage, and we believe that they are complementary and, of course, not at odds with one another. And I'd also like to thank Nick. I shared with Nick and I have been in pretty regular contact over email this week leading up to the program, and I shared with him an article that I'd written 3 or 4 years ago. And he had had a hand in having that actually republished this week for the website Knights Templar International. And so I'm very thankful for that, and I'd like to thank you on the air for that, Nick.
Well, it was a great article which deserved to be put back into circulation in a big way, I think.
Well, I appreciate it. You certainly did that, and it was definitely my honor. Well, let's talk now. We have about 5 minutes remaining, and then we'll let you get to bed. We've still got 2 more hours today, but we'll let you get to bed over there. It'll be about 1 a.m. by the time we get done here. 5 minutes to go. Your current activities and, of course, anything else you'd like to convey to the audience that we haven't yet touched on.
Okay, let's start with a really important bit, the commercial break from my end.
Indeed.
To see what I'm doing and what I'm thinking about and so on, people can follow me on Gab, which is the free speech alternative to Twitter, just at Nick Griffin. I'm still a presence on Twitter by the skin of my teeth. That's Nick Griffin BU. That's BU for British Unity. And I'm on Facebook again, for how long? Who can tell? As Nick Griffin. So I ask your listeners, come and follow me and keep an eye on what's going on here directly. So what am I doing? I'm involved, as you said, in introduction in the Alliance for Peace and Freedom, which was something which followed on from my being a member of the European Parliament for 5 years. And in very simple terms, it's a pan-European level political party of all the bad boys of Western European and Eastern European politics to a degree. Last year, we were funded by the European Union because we fulfilled the requirements. So through gritted teeth, they gave us money. This year, they managed to find a way to stop it. But we still exist because we're not there for the money. We're there to the genuine, proper, hardcore, principled nationalists of Western Europe. It's the NPD in Germany, Fuzzanova in Italy, and comrades in many other countries as well. So I'm heavily involved in that. As you mentioned, I'm involved in the Knights Templar International, which is a combination of religion and culture and politics. We do a lot, especially helping to guide young, promising young people in the right direction, both in terms of political experience, culture, and towards Christianity. And independently, I do a lot of work writing and recording essays on the best way forward from where we are now, but also criticizing the various false prophets. I mentioned the issue of white Sharia before, this monstrous demolition of that, which I hope has some effect. So, yep, I'm busy.
As we would expect you to be, championing our people and our faith at once. And, of course, you gave out the websites at Nick Griffin BU, again, for British Unity. For those
Nick
of you,
BU on Twitter, and just at Nick Griffin on Gab.
There you go. So between the two, for all of you who have been purged from Twitter, you can follow him on Gab. For those of you still on Twitter.
Come and get me.
That's right. That's right. Well, Nick, I tell you, this week in anticipation and preparation for this interview, Nick Griffin hasn't been on with us nearly as much as he should have been, and that's my fault. And hopefully, even though we have a little bit of a time zone differential, we broadcast live. We'd like to have all of our guests on live because it's authentic, it's real, it's unedited, it's uncensored, it's raw. And if Nick doesn't mind staying up past midnight more occasionally, we'd like to have him on more often this year. But in anticipation,
delighted.
I appreciate that, my friend. And in anticipation of our interview tonight, I went back and watched some of your greatest hits on YouTube. And if you haven't yet done so, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to do this. And any Nick Griffin search on YouTube will bring forth some worthy results, and I watched quite a few this week and was inspired. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, still to this day, you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of your speeches before European Parliament is still the most watched YouTube speech of any member of Parliament that's ever been given. Is that correct?
I believe that's the case. Certainly in terms of the countries it's really hitting. Nigel Farage obviously had some huge hits, the leader of UKIP, a very clever politician. But his stuff was only really of interest to people interested in British politics. So in terms of reach into Eastern Europe and elsewhere in the world, yeah, I believe that especially my pretty famous white genocide speech, 60 seconds, because that's all you're allowed in as your Russian democracy in the European Parliament. That speech has been put on videos, all sorts of videos. It's been seen by millions.
Well, I watched it, and I watched it again this week. And so if you haven't done so, ladies and gentlemen, please do. And I tell you, Nick is a heavyweight in victory or defeat, and we all suffer them. We all enjoy the taste of victory sometimes. We all suffer the sting of defeat at others. But through it all, we continue to soldier on. I actually watched, I think one of the things most inspiring, and I don't even remember what show it was on, but I had watched it on YouTube this week. I think right after you had left the parliament there, and it was just incredible, the grace and the determination even in defeat that you showed. It should be inspiring to all folks. Check him out. He gave you all the information earlier this segment. Find him on YouTube, Nick Griffin BU on Twitter. Nick, thank you so much. God bless you. Sleep well. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, James. Look forward to that. Cheerio. Good night.
Good night. We'll be back with Lana Lochtiff of Red Ice right after this.